On today's show,
Anne Dominus.
We hold a vigil for Ireland's deceased World Cup campaign.
We discuss the sliding door scenarios for what could have been for this Irish team.
And in a moment of naive positivity, we look to the future.
Anne Dominus.
Galileo.
Galileo.
Magnifico.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Anyway, the reason why we're so sad is we're here and we regretfully announced... We're marking...
We're going to break the news, Steve.
Have you not heard? We're marking the death of Irish Rugby's World Cup campaign. The execution was due to take 80 minutes. In reality, it took 20 minutes and Ireland were dead. But New Zealand just kept...
Just fucking firing bullets into that body.
Just killing them over and over.
He's already
Leave
dead.
Leave him alone, he's dead. Are you sad?
Yeah, look, I'm disappointed because there's always that, I think, off the back of, like, I didn't think that they would beat them last November. Off the back of the Argentinian performance, I went, oh, there's just too many, it's too disjointed, they won't be able to put it all together the following week to beat the All Blacks.
Yeah.
And they beat them. I was like, fuck, this is, you know. So even though we weren't in a healthy position going into this game, I still went, you know, they've done it before, so there's no reason, like, we're not expecting...
That was the heart. I think it was the heart telling us that we had a chance.
Yeah, yeah. Like we were saying on Thursday night, we were backing naive.
Yeah.
Backing naive.
Oh, extremely unprofessional. Anyway, I'm quite. Oh, Barry couldn't be here, by the way, to the viewers and listeners. He was too sad.
Too sad, so he flew to Toronto.
Yeah, to cheer himself up a little bit. You know, I'm not that sad. I'm sad, but I could be sadder. The reason why, would you stop? Would you cut it out?
He's gone back to happier times when we were in Limerick.
Yeah. So the reason why I'm not as sad as I might have been is because I feel like, I think you're alluding to, Irish Rugby's World Cup campaign has been kind of dying for a while.
Maybe not. Well, you could look at it, everyone is dying, but it was probably...
The second Irish Rugby was born. It's been dying ever since.
I think it's been ill.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been ill. Yeah, so I've got a timeline for Irish rugby's death.
Okay.
Just the World Cup campaign's death. The initial diagnosis was in February when we got beat by England. Because we were in full health.
We had an infection.
Oh, I think it was more than an infection.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, it was an initial diagnosis. The seriousness of the condition escalated when we got beat by Wales in March. Then we were not.
Are we on antibiotics now, or we're like when we're talking about where we are?
Yes.
Have we gone to hospital? Or have we gone to?
Okay. No, you're right. We oral antibiotics after England. IV antibiotics. We after the Wales game, we looked like the time O'Connell.
Anal antibiotics.
No.
After the Welsh game, no.
IV because I like the idea that we looked like O'Connell when he was on IV antibiotics that time.
Oh yeah.
He looked a lot closer to death.
How's Paul O'Connell? He's not doing great. He's got very, very thin.
Yeah.
Very shook looking.
Just got beat by Wales. So we were... it escalated the seriousness. Then we played England in the first World Cup warm-up game.
Second.
Mm. Yeah, totally forgot about the success of the Italy game.
Yeah.
Italy seconds.
The glory of that one.
Yeah. Terminal at that stage.
Terminal. Oh, we were diagnosed as terminal.
Yes. Now they said we got 2 months to live.
Okay. So we said, oh, we've got to squeeze in a World Cup victory quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Before we die. So then we played Japan, second game of the group, and then our date for execution was announced. Now I know he's terminally ill, and then we were terminally ill, and now we're getting executed. So it's a little bit of a change of.
Yeah, okay.
But it just works in a minute.
I think this, what's that called? It's in Switzerland.
Euthanasia.
Yeah, so they went, poor old Ireland have been sick for a while. Let's put them out of their misery.
Yeah.
We'll give them a date. We'll call it the quarterfinals.
Yeah, fine.
With New Zealand.
Okay, fine. They've got their date.
But how did we were still getting it like, as in, we're going to live. And they were like,
we didn't know.
Oh, we didn't know.
It had been, I think we had an inkling. That we're going to be put out of our...
Yeah.
Out of our...
we were basically sitting in the corner at the with the last eight in the World Cup with like a tartan blanket over our legs, yeah. Just sucking sweets and going, yeah, what's up next? And everyone's like, that's okay now, Ireland. You tip away there, you'll be fine.
Yeah, but like we had a pride mask on. Mm. And if you take that mask on, we were kind of like, we were like, oh, man, I'm on you in there again.
When they took the oxygen off us, we were like this, I'm ready to give it to those All Blacks. I've had an accident.
Yeah, so anyway, we finally then got put to rest this morning, 19th of October. Again, sad, but not as sad as we had it.
Dominus.
What's that?
It's like the removal for us.
Oh, is that like a north-south thing?
No.
Is that why I don't get that?
What is the north-south thing? You're from the north.
No, I know, but what is that? I don't.
I thought it was like some sort of like monks chanting.
Oh, right, it's a monks thing. Yeah. I should have got that. That's fine. I wonder.
Yeah, clearly.
I wonder. One other illustration, I suppose. The 2011 World Cup, I didn't start, didn't play that much rugby, but we were in Carton House all summer, and I played way more golf than rugby. I got golfer's elbow. I was playing out of my skin. I was playing class golf, like pinging this four iron off the tee as far as you'd hit your driver. And then ever since then, it's kind of ruined. I don't like golf anymore because I used to be good at golf. And anytime I play golf, I'm like, oh, why am I playing so badly? And recently I've had to come to terms with the fact that I'm not a good golfer, and that was just a period of time. Are Ireland, are they, is their default position where they were last year? Or is this the Ireland team and last year was a blip? Not a blip, the opposite of a blip.
I think we're, I'm not really sure if I'm completely on the same.
You're not a golfer. You're obviously not a golfer.
Well, what I'm saying, I think we're pretty good golfers. We're good golfers.
Yeah.
But we played against the best golfer in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our game had slowly been deteriorating a little bit. Maybe our wives left us in February and we had to get a second job. We couldn't spend as much time on the course.
Uh-huh.
And we were just going that way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And we also got sick and we had the antibiotics.
Yeah, no, to be fair, that's the big issue,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, but the wife leaving us in February was tough.
Yeah.
And the amount of golf that we were getting in, our game wasn't improving.
Yeah.
It was probably, we were trying to get back to where we were all the time. When
we were staying still. All Blacks were getting, Tiger was getting better.
Yeah.
McIlroy was getting better. That's England, I don't know. No, Justin Rose.
Yeah.
They were all getting better. Wheels were getting better. And we were just pottering about, not taking that seriously.
Yeah.
We were trying too hard.
Our lives were falling apart a little bit.
Yeah. A lot like yours.
Yeah.
In the last few months.
Yeah. Exactly,
we'll get into the rugby.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's not get into my life falling apart.
Let's get into the rugby. One area I thought would be interested to see. I know you've touched on this in the past. I know you spent a bit of time, you went and visited Rog, and like you've a hot take on New Zealand rugby, but I thought it was night and day. I thought New Zealand were better in all areas, but in particular, it was their face play and their forwards and their tip-ons and their skills. Did you see that?
Yeah, 100%. I thought, look, like I'm disappointed that we lost. I felt it was going to be a massive stretch for us to go from where we were to beating the All Blacks. And the reality is that they are better. They are just a better rugby team, and they can play a brand of rugby that we can't play because our players don't have the same skill set. And it's not just us, Ireland. There's no other team in the world who has the same skill set as the All Blacks. So if you're trying to play them, like if you're trying to play All Black rugby against them, you're just going to have 500 handling errors because you're not going to have the same skill set. Like how flat they had forwards playing right on the line, playing tip-ons, and then get their hands free and getting a little offload. It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But that's because they work on the technical aspect of just catch pass, catch pass, catch pass. Like we didn't lose the game because we weren't strong or because we weren't conditioned or because, you know, the stuff that every team that's at the World Cup has pretty much access to is like conditioning, you know, making sure that our athletes are there, you know, nutrition, all those things. Like they're there. But what underpins the New Zealand game plan is just their catch pass skills are so good.
Yeah.
And they just that means that you see the game differently. You're less risk averse. Like people go like, oh, Joe Schmidt's too conservative. Potentially you could say that, like that we are conservative. But we're actually playing to what the strengths of this playing group is.
Yeah. Now, because I think we can't do that. We can't do what New Zealand does in terms of his play. If
Joe Schmidt was here as a director of rugby or a head of performance, I'm sure he would be like, okay, well, I can't affect change with the. I can't take a guy who's now 25 years of age when he comes into national camp and make him 45% more skillful, because I have little windows during the year that they come into national camp. But if you start with those guys when they're 10 and you work on their catch pass skills,
yeah,
well, then by the time they get into national camp when they're 21, 22, they're a far better player. And I think that's where Irish rugby needs to go, is upskilling the coaches at the underage level, because trying to bridge the gap, Ireland have done as good a job as anyone else in bridging the gap with the small player pool that we have in terms of competing with those kind of with countries like that. And that's the strength of Joe Schmidt's coaching. Like, New Zealand don't, or South Africa don't try and play like New Zealand. England don't try and play like New Zealand. Yeah. England are adding extra layers. They're trying to develop the skill set of their forwards, but they still rely on front door runners, on Sinclair, on Laws, on Vunipola, Mako and Billy, and then Tuilagi. They rely on that, but much like Saracens, then they're good at playing flat out the back door, so that if they don't hit the front, teams, their defenders have to load to make the tackle on Tuilagi, and they expect to go, shit, they've gone out the back door.
They call their bluff on it enough for it to be a real threat, and we saw that today, actually.
With Leile Fano was reading out the back on Tuilagi, and they just went and hit Sinclair, and Sinclair just was in.
Yeah.
So like that's a
slightly less complicated version of what New Zealand do. Now, I'm contradicting myself here, because I was actually going to make the point they're not doing anything that special.
No.
But they're just hitting a forward who can tip it on. He can pull it back here to a back.
Mm.
And then it's the same shape then off that back once he gets the ball. It's really simple.
It's
just done unbelievably well.
When I went down to New Zealand, and I went down, and myself and Jonesy went down there, and I wanted to see, because the criticism of Munster is that when we're outside our 22, we're just way too predictable, that we were just loading to get to the kick every single time. Like, we would just kick a box kick, and because we were kicking off a static base, off a ruck, teams would just go, oh, Conor Murray's coming up, I can see them packing that ruck, I can see that their back line are all flat now to chase it, so that their wingers just start cheating back into the backfield, like not being worried about us running the ball, and they start dropping a back row into the backfield, and then we can't get any of our chasers through, because they escort us too well, and they have a back row catches the ball and carries the ball back. So I went down there going, and I met the attack coach down there, Brad Moir, and I said, he's the Scarlet's head coach. I said, listen, talk me through your shape, you know, when you're outside the 22, and he just goes, shape is like this. And I said, that's the same as us. He goes, yeah. I said, well, what are your policies? He goes, well, you know, I suppose, he goes, you've got to run kick focus in any game plan. And he said, when the start of Super Rugby, when the weather is dry, the pitches are hard, the ball is dry, we might play six phases in our own half, just trying to manipulate the backfield and see if we can create space to get to the run. And when the weather gets a little bit, you know, the second half of Super Rugby, when the ball's wet, the pitches are a bit heavier, we might play three or four phases, and then we'll get to the kick if we haven't built anything within those three or four phases. But what I noticed is that it was all about the technical development of each individual player, because if your players have a higher skill set, you can literally play anyway. You know, you can play in any way, and that's exactly what they do. They just non-stop every single time. Tommy was telling me that that's what Ulster were doing now, is that they're just constantly working on those little 3 meter passes, a tip on pass for a forward, and a little pull back 3 meter pass for a forward, and then for the backs a 7 meter pass, and just being able to run dead straight and pass the ball. And it's actually when you go down there and you see it, and you realise how much extra time their players appear to have on the ball, because they're running straight, they're catching the ball early, and they're comfortable to move the ball. That's the difference.
That's what Charles Piatow said when he arrived at Ulster, because we would have strategically arranged plays around giving it to maybe two or three forwards that we know were capable of executing, being able to catch and pass like a back, like a good back, Charles Piatow made the point, if you get guys who aren't that coordinated, aren't known for doing that, for executing that, if you get them rehearsing it over and over, you'd be surprised at what they can execute. Every single player in that New Zealand pack can do that.
Obviously
Reid gets the highlights reel.
Joe Moody was really impressive for them today. Like, and he didn't do a huge amount handling wise, but he, you know,
Talik as well.
Yeah,
they link unbelievably
Scott
well.
Barrett. But like, if you watch the shape, they'd always have two forwards in the middle of the park, just running, staying in lane, running dead square all the time, and they're a passing option or they're a carrying option. And it's just their ability to stay square. They don't eat up space, then they're always filling the field.
So I think, though, if you rewind a year, I think Ireland showed, like, that was the type of rugby they were able to get into that phase play, and they were able to get holes and run hard and tip on and go out the back. They were executing that more often than not, but today they couldn't catch a pass. And I wonder if my thought on it is, it looked like New Zealand scored twice early on, and then when you're playing New Zealand, you've already got a mountain to climb. They scored twice early on, it's game over. Is that the mindset that I'm communicating, the mindset that they were reflecting on the pitch? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, and then almost it becomes harder to catch because you feel like you've got so much to do.
Yeah, I think the problem is that when you, I'd imagine that Ireland's strength lies in structure, in the players all being aligned, and us having a very good nine and a very good 10 who are excellent kickers of the ball. most of our backs are good at fielding the ball in the air, and we've got a really competitive set piece. Like, that's a kind of a foundation of the game. So, like, if we just kick the ball loosely and just said, let's just give the All Blacks time and we'll just deal with it, they'll rip us apart. So we wanted to keep the game as structured as possible. Like, whenever we kick the ball, we want to have it either goes way off the pitch to stop the play, or else there's a contest on it every time, that they have no time to actually launch a counter on us. But when you go behind, like we do, and we start having to chase the game a little bit, you've got to open up. Like, that's the problem. And I think that's why we ended up conceding over 40 points, is that, like, we start chasing the game a little bit. Look, we didn't play well either. Like, things that we would normally execute, when that Irish team is playing well, they didn't come off for us. Like, missing touch,
drop balls,
some of our discipline stuff. Yeah, I thought our scrum was stronger. Line-up was okay, but, like, you know, it's just that we're really reliant on being perfect in certain positions. Whereas if there's 10 things we need to get right, if the line-out, the scrum, the restarts, our discipline, our D, you know, aerially, like, if we don't have... If one of those things is off, our game is generally going to really struggle against a team like the All Blacks, where if the All Blacks don't get any delivery off their scrum or their line-out, or if they're not really winning the restarts, there'll still be turnovers in the game. We will turn the ball over at times and they'll get an opportunity and they'll just ID where the space is, and they have the skill set to, there's the space, get the ball there and exploit it. And if there's a loose kick, they straight away just fall into a really effective shape, and every single player is able to ask a question of the opposition defence.
Yeah. David, so you'd say the same, though, for them, though. I'm thinking of Aaron Smith's second try, where the launch off the scrum. And I find that interesting, because typically your principal, I suppose, trying to defend a play like that, where it goes just a miss pass and then it goes out the back to the blind side wing. It went to Sevi Reese out the back of Bowden Barrett. Off Goodhue. And if that pass from Moanga to Goodhue is early, everybody shifts out and Henshaw takes him. And if that pass is late, it's at the line, then Ringrose hits him. But that pass was kind of late, but not that late. And it was like the perfect execution. It was perfect. Then the pass from Goodhue is a blind pass, really, really difficult. Obviously, that's just the backs bit. The execution of the scrum, the link from 9 to 10... There's a lot of stuff has to go right there as well, but it always does go right for New Zealand. Yeah, you know what I mean? I thought that play was unbelievably well executed.
Their skill level is a buffer for them as well. So even like if you watch in the South African game, when their scrum was on the back foot, there was one stage their scrum was going backwards, and Faf de Klerk put massive pressure on Aaron Smith. Aaron Smith, most nines would pick the ball and tuck it. Aaron Smith bowled the ball, like, stepped around Faf de Klerk and bowled the ball in a one-handed offload out to Richie Mwanga to Mwanga, whoever he bowled the ball out with a one-handed offload about 12 metres. And as that guy, I think it was Leonard Brown, caught the ball. And as he did, the 13 for South Africa just smashed into him. But they just kept keeping the ball alive. Their skill set just gives them such a buffer that when things aren't perfect, and when they do get a perfect delivery from a scrum like they did for Smith's second try, they're just it's just so hard to defend. Looking at it, I'm not sure what the Irish system is, so everyone can chirp in and say, this is what I think and that's what I think. It looked to me like you said, Ringrose tried to go and get man and ball. It looked like Robbie Henshaw missed the jump. They looked tight initially on the inside. They looked a little bit tight, and I would have thought that Earlsey could have started a little bit wider if they'd been pulled out a little bit further, but it's neither here nor there, and I don't know, so I'm...
I know exactly, but we're guessing.
The thing is more to just say, shit, that was really well executed.
Yeah.
That's so hard to defend.
Yeah.
And even what I noticed is, in the first 20 minutes, is how effective, like, we talk about they're just doing the basics that everyone does, but just doing them better. So skills is one thing, but their accuracy at the breakdown, in terms of how they were moving bodies beyond the ball to lengthen the ruck, to deepen the ruck, to move the offside line back, and to free up the ball so that just giving your halfback, giving your nine an extra meter or two of vision to see what he's going to do is, they were really impressive with that.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to sound really vague and typical, kind of what you hear from rugby commentators, but their breakdown being so clinical allows their phase play to be good.
Yeah,
because then their phase play is good. The rich get richer, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Then their breakdown is easy.
It's cyclical.
So I don't know what the catalyst is. I'm sure it's both together, but their breakdown was, no one got anywhere near it. And again, it's probably because they get a good foothold, because their skills are so good. So all things kind of affecting each other. But I thought New Zealand were ridiculously good. And I think I could end up with egg on my face in this, but England were good too. Mm. Anybody who thinks England are going to beat New Zealand next week, I think they're dreaming.
Fuck off. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't want to change the subject too early here, but
I'm looking forward to it, because I think England have got a bit more to them. Like, if England were just a we'll give it to our big powerful ball carriers, like, that's, you can defend that. But it's when they're playing with a little bit more of their ability to play
the Sinclair
out the back
try, that sort of stuff.
That's really quality. But they still don't have the unstructured ability that the All Blacks have. That, you know, when just IDing where space is and just everyone being aligned and everyone just working as a unit to just rip you apart.
We'll cut this clip. When England win next weekend, we'll cut this clip.
I'll just play it
over and over.
It's going to be a good game, though. I think the best eight teams got through to the quarterfinals, and now they're... And the best teams won today as well, unfortunately.
You don't think there's anything in... a few people saying today that New Zealand and England looked unbelievably fresh as a result of having one game less or 2 weeks rest.
That's probably legitimate. That's probably a fair point. I just think... they're all little things that come in. There's a myriad of factors that will come into... like why we would have lost the game today. I don't think it was down to them being fresher than us completely. It's definitely a factor, but I think it's just coming down to just better.
Yeah,
they're just better.
One other thing then, whenever the Ireland team was announced on Thursday, whatever it was, I was busy running around. Oh, we were at the show. Mm. Yeah, on Thursday. So I was kind of busy running around, and someone said, "Oh, the team's announced." Oh yeah, okay. And looked at it and I thought, I kind of shrugged my shoulders.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you would expect.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Grand. You know, there was nothing, no inkling of anything surprising in any way.
Mm.
And it's kind of a reflection of where we've been, you know. That would have been the team. Zero excuses almost, you know, because that was the team that Joe Schmidt would have wanted to put out from a year ago, probably.
Yeah.
And then you look at the evolution of New Zealand and England in the last year, and it's just totally different, you know. And I know I'm not saying it's a selection thing. I'm just saying it's the number of quality players pushing frontliners. And I'm thinking, like, this time last year, would you ever have dreamed Beauden Barrett wouldn't be starting 10? Or Ben Smith wouldn't be playing?
I said this to Tommy today. I said, like, the fact that New Zealand they decided, we've Ben Smith, who's probably one of the most rounded rugby players in the world. He's just phenomenal, can play anywhere. And they went, fuck, what if we just got Beauden Barrett in the wider channels, took advantage of his pace, had used him as another first receiver. Yeah, and then the fact that they did it during the rugby championship, and at times they weren't playing well, like the New Zealand weren't playing well, and they said, oh, we're gonna persist with this. And
yeah, and it went on for at least a couple of games
yeah.
and it didn't work.
And I think I'd like to imagine that, like, in a sliding doors alternate universe, that if Joey Carberry hadn't got, like, because it's no point people give out and they say, like, oh, it's just the same old consistent selection. Well, what was going to change, really? You know?
Yeah, there's a reason why it's been a consistent selection, because
those guys have delivered, yeah. But the guys below haven't really, like, I think Rory deserved to start. Rory had a really good World Cup. And, you know, there's also a bit like when you suddenly go changing guys that you've never changed before and you change them in knockout stages at a quarterfinal, you're going, oh, shit, are we panicking a little bit here?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, the Australian 13, what's his name?
Pitaya.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, well, like James O'Connor came in for the Rugby Championship. You know what I mean? Like, Rob Kearney's been playing for Ireland since 1982, nearly, you know? So, like, I would have been a little bit like, oh, shit, like, I'm not sure if Joe had a second 15 option or if he had a second option at hooker, really, you know, that was applying pressure. I'd like to have imagined that if Joey Carberry, who's one of the creator, if Joey had not been injured during the Six Nations, that he may have gotten some game time there. And
especially the form he looked in against, I know it was Italy reserves.
Yeah, and then in the Italy game, he was phenomenal there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he got injured. And you'd like to see him, well, look, we could have played around with, you know, you could have Joey at 10 with Johnny at 12. You could have Johnny at 10 with Joey at 15. And that would really open up our game.
Because
all the way through the tournament, like whenever we didn't have, this is it's not a criticism on Jack Carty. I'm comparing him to a guy who's been voted the best player in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We've really looked like, when we haven't had Johnny, we haven't looked like we've managed games well, or whenever Johnny's on the field, it's always like looking to Johnny.
Uh-huh.
Whereas when you have another guy there to take the pressure off him, it just makes such a difference. And I'd like anyone who thinks that Joe Schmidt just said, this is it, I'm not going to evolve how I'm going to play, and I'm just going to freeze this moment in time and just go forward, I think that would be naive.
Naive, which we're all buying into. Yeah. We're all big fans of it.
Yeah, we're all fans of being naive.
The other, I suppose, the big difference from this World Cup to last World Cup is the competition for places.
Mm.
It's still not quite there because of the reasons we're saying.
Yeah.
But if Dan Levy hadn't got injured, if Jack Carty had been maybe in the form he had been with Leinster at the end of the season, and obviously not got injured.
Jack Conan.
Then all of a sudden there's a few options in the back row.
Mm.
And then centres all stayed fit. Then Bundy obviously got banned. But apart from that, the centre was the one area, as we were chatting to Rory Scannell about.
Yeah, it was so
you don't want to be a
centre
in Ireland. But I don't think we've got that everywhere else, really.
Well, and I thought Conway was outstanding. And he would have been pushing Jacob at Stockdale and pushing Keith Earls. I think there was big competition through the centre. I don't think there was big competition at 10. I don't think there was big competition at 9. I think, I'm not sure how much Scannell or Sean Cronin pushed Rory, but I think Rory responded. I think Dave Kilcoyne was definitely pushing Cian Healy.
Yeah.
I think Porter had a good World Cup overall. I think he was pushing Tighe. I think Tighe was decent. And then,
Do you think it would have been nice? Sorry to come across, like, hold that thought. I think it would have been nice, maybe, even like culturally within the squad, for Dave Kilcoyne to have got a start in one of the big games at the start of the pool, and then it would have sent a message to everybody else. You know what? If you keep at it, you're close. You're going well. There's a lot of competition. Realistically, you could be starting a World Cup knockout stages game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know. Fuck, man, I think, like, to be fair,
the big call, like, Kane obviously is enormous for Ireland, but, you know, I'm just saying, culturally it might have been a really nice message to send out.
Yeah, I would imagine, when looking back on it now, it looks like Joe is just so loyal through his selections all the time, and those guys generally deliver for him, but I would have thought that, like, with the way Killer was performing, that Church would be going, okay, well, I've got to perform here now because Joe isn't just going to pick me just because I've delivered for him in the past.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that it could have mixed things up a little bit there at times, but I don't know how much options we had by the end of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Disappointing, really disappointing.
Yeah, sad.
Yeah.
But at least we knew they'd been down for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
They're out of their misery now, unfortunately.
Fuck it.
I've got one hot take.
Yeah.
James Lowe, I was talking about this before. I don't think I'm worried I've mentioned this. James Lowe, I heard him chatting, might have been a year ago, publicly, and he said he was asked the big difference between Irish rugby and New Zealand rugby. Playing rugby in Ireland, played rugby in New Zealand. And he said it's the emphasis on mental skills and the capacity to cope with whatever it is, like, you know, a lack of execution or being, you know, conceding scores early on or something. And I think that shows in Irish rugby. Not in Irish rugby. Just recently I've seen it a few times. I've thought against Japan, whenever Japan came back at us, this is against Japan, that I thought the contrast of our body language and the way we were playing and the impact it was having on our energy and our, you know, it just looked like we just lacked confidence. We didn't look like a team that was going to get a foothold back in the game and claw the game back. Japan, whenever they conceded two tries early on, they just looked bulletproof. They just looked like it meant nothing to them. They were going to get back into the game, and they ultimately did. And they gave us the runaround. New Zealand, we conceded two tries early on against New Zealand. I think we're beat.
Yeah.
And then kind of what I was talking about earlier on, once we're beat and we look slumped, we look down, we look defeated, and then we just can't catch or pass. I think the mental capacity then impacts the skill execution.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting to tease that out with him, because if you look at it, like, generally your mental strength improves as you get older via experience. Experience only matters if you make a mistake and then you don't make that mistake again. Well, then you've learned from it. Otherwise, it's just, you're just consistently making mistakes. But if you look at it, like, the majority of that Irish team have a lot of experience, so we shouldn't drop our heads just when we go behind. But just when you're saying, I was just thinking, the difference is that the All Blacks can manufacture a score with far less effort than Ireland would have to put in. You know, so that it never feels like they're a million miles away. So even if the opposition score two tries, they say, "Well, yeah, well, if the opposition drop the ball, we'll just rip that one up and we can carve a score out of nothing." Like, when I played with Munster years ago like 2006, I remember, like, we won the European Cup and we were like, my God, it's so hard for us to make a try. Like, we have to, like, penalty, kick in the touch, maul, penalty, kick in the touch, get the 12 to hit it up, like 500 phases, and then eventually try, and we're coming back and we're exhausted. And after that year, we just said, listen, we're not going to be competitive in Europe if we can't just start manufacturing and try out a nothing.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, we had Doug Howlett, we had Lafimi Maffey and Rua Tupoki, and we were just like, the lads could pull a try out of their ass, out of nothing, and I wouldn't even touch a breakdown.
Yeah.
You know, that was the difference, because you just, suddenly you've got a 7-pointer rather than, you know, having to play 200 phases to score a maul try for Rog to kick it and then Rog to start nipping away penalties at him.
You
need to be able to score tries out of nothing. And it took us signing Maffey, Tupoki.
So did you, because I know Ireland, even when I was with Ireland for the last maybe 3-4 years, we did mindfulness. Did you do anything like that with Munster?
We did, yeah. We had Declan O'Hearn, and we had Declan O'Hearn and Jerry Hussey were two guys who came in as sports psych guys with us. And Declan O'Hearn introduced the mindfulness stuff. This is 2005, 2006 now. So a lot of people were kind of like, who's this spoon bender talking to me? But like, if you're open to it, you're open to it. And some people do it instinctively and they don't see the value in someone coming in coaching them on their mental skills. And then I would definitely be someone who would overthink things.
Yeah.
So I found it good to give me a kind of a mental pathway where I would always try and bring myself somewhere positive, particularly with close skills like throwing.
I'm just remembering, we in around the same time with Ulster, maybe 2006, 7, something like that, we got a guy in, and it was all just about imagining a more positive outcome, and then you tend to get a more positive outcome. I think it was as basic as that. It was the early days, as you say.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did a workshop where we were sent to a corner of the room with, like, by yourself to kind of sit in isolation, and I can't remember exactly what the emphasis was, but we sat there for a few minutes. I can't remember what we were told, what our cues were anyway. This was all new to all of us. And we were all, like, kind of a wee bit giggly and a bit cynical, you know. And then after maybe a minute or two silence, then he pressed play, and it was, "You've got to search for the
Lighthouse family." Yourself.
Oh, M people, isn't it?
M people.
We were just like, "Oh my goodness, this is hard."
That's M people.
I think so. Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which guy's in the Lighthouse family?
Lifted.
We are going to be. Yeah.
Fuck! Yeah. It's such shit music, man. Yeah. It's such shit music.
Yeah. So this guy thought, oh, this is going to be brilliant. All the boys are going to be searching for the hero inside themselves. we certainly weren't. I wasn't looking for the hero.
It's too cheesy.
Yeah.
The mental skill side is definitely, it would definitely be a really good way. Like I'd like to try and get James Lowe back on.
He said that they spend nearly as much time rehearsing their mental skills as their physical skills. Sorry, I think he said they do spend as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly. This is ages ago, so I'm remembering bits of it, but I wish we should have dug deeper.
Mental skills is quite a broad.
Yes, I know.
Like, there's the whole thing of like creating frameworks for you to deal with like mistakes and stuff on the field, to deal with setbacks, to get yourself rooted in the present. What are you laughing at?
Just the way you said that, like you're South African.
To get yourself rooted back in the present and play the moment in front of you rather than living the time behind you. And then there's obviously using imagery, you know, visualization and stuff like that to try and work on your skills, like your fielding the high ball and stuff like that. Did you do much of that?
Oh yeah, I did a lot of that. Yeah, I would have been like,
you the mind gym with
mind gym. Yeah, I'd have been walking around my room, kind of imagining the ball, and like I felt like I couldn't get into character when I was sitting down. So I felt like I had to almost like act it out.
Mm.
I do think that helps. But yeah, again, it helps me execute a skill. But does it help me be more confident that we are going to win this game? Or, you know, I know.
No, I understand what you mean. What I mean. I understand how tangible is it that you can actually turn this around when you feel yourself going behind?
Yeah.
And I suppose the more equipped you are in the field to feel like you can manufacture a score yourself, then you'll feel more confident.
I do think in the Ireland setup, there is an emphasis. I know, like, Joe's very big on next moment. It's the next moment. There's no point in worrying about the moment after that because you execute that first and then you move on.
Mm.
It's all really sensible stuff. Like, that's where I've kind of become aware of a lot of stuff. Mm. So there definitely is a lot of it going on. But I just wonder if maybe there's like a shift in an emphasis or something new that we're missing out on.
I don't know. I think,
the other thing is Farrell, with his defense, he talks about, I don't want to say the word that he uses because it's probably a secret, but the word that he uses to describe the defense, he said he says it's not necessary, it's about your body language. And he's big on, if you're positive and your body language is upbeat and enthusiastic, the impact that has on your teammate is really significant. You can tell whenever you're playing and there's an energy in the team.
Yeah.
You can tell, and it's infectious.
I remember years ago it was the whole thing about, like, people used to look at Wasps years ago, like when Wasps were like the kind of premier club, and they're like, they would always focus on, you know, when Owen Redden was there, Johnny O'Connor was there, and I remember that I would always be asking them what's it like, and they were like, oh, we're playing with Lawrence Delalio and Raf Ibanez and Rob Howley, and they'd say it's always like they put a massive emphasis on conditioning, being super fit, but then they would always try and let's take advantage of it, but it's like big chest, you know, like staying big all the time and positive body language and no hands on hips, no one's foot bent over looking tired, because the opposition look across at you and that your body language does play a role.
Yeah, I remember when Redden came back from Wasps, then he was in the Irish camp. He wasn't back from us. It was whenever he got picked for Ireland in the squad. Do you remember this? Lukey Fitz.
Bring that up. Thank fuck you.
Yeah. Lukey Fitz asking for a massage.
I thought he was a masseuse.
And then Reggie was like, what are you talking about? I'm a player. And he goes, oh. He said, I play for Wasps. He's sorry, I don't watch Premiership.
Brilliant. I was actually chatting to Redzer the other day. He's still really tight with his money. It's crazy. But he's, good. Well, that's good getting that little slag in him.
Yeah. I know you're a big fan of slagging Redzer.
Little weasel.
So
the alternate universe, we're more competitive. But we're looking at loads of things around the main thing, and the main thing is that it's a higher skill set.
Yeah.
And is get younger players catching and passing
at a better quality from the start. Because there's so much, like when I played rugby, it was like when I was a kid, it was like the get the ball to the big guy and then everyone just running around after him all the time.
Were you the big guy?
No. I would just try and get the ball to him. Yeah. I was the fat guy.
Not the fat guy. The big guy.
I was a good tackler. But I remember when I first went out, like I'd say I was six and my dad brought me out training with the under-10s and they put me in the backs and I was miles out in the wing and I was freezing. I started crying and then they brought me into the forwards and then I was playing the forwards. We used to get fucking pumped every week, man. I'd come home, my mum would be there, how'd you get on? I said, we lost. And I'd just go out. And I was playing a presentation at a small club in Limerick. And then when I went to St Munchen's, then moved to Shannon, and we used to win all the time, man. And we won, like, the
jump
league.
Jump ship.
Yeah, I know, but, like, I had to move because presentation disbanded, the underage did. And I remember, like, winning the league and then, like, going to training the following week and thinking that it would be a party. And they were like, we were just training again. And I was like, oh, but we won the league last week. And they were like, so what, man? Just get out there again.
I wasn't the big kid in school or not in school, in mini rugby. I wasn't the big kid, but I was the fast kid.
Yeah.
So I would have scored all our tries and stuff, and it would be give the ball to Andrew, and then I a couple of times like really patronised one or two of my teammates by getting over the line and passing
and passing the ball.
Yeah, passing to the fat kid.
Yeah, that's me.
I peaked when I was a youngster, like playing mini rugby, and then I'd say maybe whenever I went to secondary school, like. Second year, which is like you're 13, 14, all of a sudden, I know we touch on pubes quite a bit, but all of a sudden, I still...
Only our own.
Yeah. I didn't have any pubes, and all my mates started getting pubes, and I was like, what is going on here? Why am I getting so crap at rugby?
Oh, you thought it was under pubes?
Yeah, and then I eventually caught up again, but I was a late starter, so I got to where I peaked when I was a youngster, and then took a dip during that wee awkward teenager phase, and then got good again when towards 17, 18.
Facial hair is the big one, man. Testosterone, guys having a lot of facial hair when they're 14, 15, I used to find that quite intimidating when I played. I'd be like, fuck, man, that guy's... He can grow sideburns.
Yeah. Okay, let's change gears slightly. Let's talk about the future, I suppose. So, obviously, the lack of future, I suppose.
Well, we were executed. We died. We were executed.
Yeah. Let's talk about the afterlife.
The resurrection.
Yeah, the resurrection. Nice, more positive.
Resurrection, because afterlife would be... We wouldn't actually be able to compete anymore.
Yeah. So, most of the team gets resurrected, but Joe and Rory... It's the end of the line. It would be remiss of us not to pay testament to Joe and Rory. Obviously, you tussled with Rory in the early days and probably came out on top more often.
Nah. Well, he's 120 caps. He's like, no. Like 80 caps more than
me. At the time, had you not done your calves, you'd be in the mix.
You'd
be captain, would you?
No, he definitely
would. You'd be walking around with your three kids. Even though you only got two.
I don't think I would have anywhere near the durability of Rory, because Rory's naturally, like, Rory was a fat kid. He was the fat kid when he came into camp. Yeah. So he's naturally big. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I was always trying to lift weights to build myself up just to compete with him. And then I think I just saw the penny dropping with him over time, where he just started going, I just need to work a little bit harder on keeping my weight down and getting fit. And
he was always fit, to be fair. Yeah. He was all like him and Chris Henry, the two guys. I don't think you'd look at Rory and say he's gonna be an absolute, like, the type of machine that he is for Ireland for 80 minutes consistently. But he's really, really fit.
His durability, man, is phenomenal. To play 120 tests as a hooker, man, is just I don't know how. And that's just one aspect of it. But to play to play 120 tests, to keep going into the same job all the time when the pressure keeps going. Like once you're like 32, people are like, I think he's finished, and they're just constantly waiting to get you out the door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not giving you, allowing you time. They're just actively trying to get rid of you. It's like, do you want to head away? Yeah. Do you want to head away? Yeah. And then to see all these young guys coming up, to see all your best, like when himself and Leamy are best mates, and when Leamy retired from the game, I said, that's going to be hard for Rory, you know.
Yeah.
Rory just keeps reinventing himself, staying relevant. Like, you know better than me, and you jump in it, but seeing him to be able to stay relevant to all these, to a younger group of players, you got to, I spoke to O'Connell about it, like, I was like, you have to keep you just have to keep working down, like down to their level, and you know, chatting to them, and
yeah, you know, no, you're right. He has stayed relevant locally in Ulster. Everybody looks up to Rory. They always have. I know that's no surprise, but everybody. He's not just a guy who's kind of, I suppose, a leader. He's a guy everybody genuinely gets on well with. Mm. So he's culturally right in the middle of everything that's going on socially in Ulster as well. So there's a genuineness to his leadership.
Yeah, I think if it's not genuine, people see through it straight away.
Especially if you're 37.
Yeah.
If you're not genuine, you get found out like before you even get to your mid-20s.
Mm.
So, and you're right. So he reinvented himself on the pitch, but everything off the pitch is... And it's not unseen because it's been documented and people, you know, pay testament to Rory often. But there's so much going on. He's so well-rounded in what he contributes.
Mm.
And I think to have done that for so long, unlike you give up early, you know.
Yeah, I just give up. That's it. No, he's... And to be fair, man, his game, he grew his game as well, because when you're looking at, like... I remember being in Munster when Sean Cronin was popping up in the academy and I was like, oh, fuck. I said, this guy, I can't compete with his level of athleticism, so I've got to try and find what's my strong point. I said, okay, well, I've got to be unbelievably good at set piece. I've got to be the fittest guy in the field every time I play. And, you know, to see Rory competing with guys like Sean, Rickard Strauss when he was there as well, you know, Herring, who else? That's pretty much it, isn't it? That's it.
Yeah. Well, recently Scannell.
And Niall Scannell, to see him competing with those guys, and then Rory just to keep trying to focus on his fundamentals. But I think, like, he's a really good, he's a clever footballer, and he's also I thought his breakdown work over the last few years. I used to say to younger lads in Munster, I said, like, look at the way Rory Best keeps evolving. Like, as he loses pace or as he loses a little bit of an ability to win a collision, he finds other ways. So he's really clever with his defence. You know, where he makes sure that he's cutting guys' space down as much as he can so he can win that collision. When he's carrying the ball, he'll try to keep the ball alive rather than saying, well, I'm not going to run over this guy. And, you know, I think he's had an amazing career. He's been...
Yeah.
He's a warrior that way.
Yeah. He got a send-off. You know, knockout stages of the World Cup. He obviously wanted to go further, but
what the fuck? Like, people are like, "Oh, isn't it such a pity?" And I was like, "It's a pity to get 120 caps to lose to a team that's way better than you at the World Cup." Like, that's
who gets to really finish on their terms? Like, and the only kind of terms that he would have really wanted would have been to win the World Cup.
Yeah, I think if you said to him at the start, "Listen, you're going to play 120 times for Ireland, you get knocked out there." Like, obviously, they would have poured so much effort into this, but. You don't have a right, a God given right to anything. You know, you get what you deserve.
Just because O'Driscoll got the blimp, that was
and
then Rog, like a couple of weeks later, no blimp.
Where's my blimp?
Yeah,
it's just like you can't feel so sort of precious that.
Yeah, I doubt he
deserve this
won't.
And that. Now, Rory was like super humble, sure, and he was. I think he's a great ambassador for Irish rugby as well. So
Joe. I've heard a few people talking then today about Joe. He would be judged on his World Cup campaigns, but there's so much goes on in between the World Cups, and he's had so much success. Like to have had two Grand Slams up till 2009. Then Joe came in. When did Joe come in?
2013.
To be fair. When you say we've two Grand Slams, we had the Grand Slam in 1956 or some shit like that, and that was Five Nations, you know. So the first real Grand Slam was the 2009 one, and after people have done some, so that was the first time we really won that.
Yeah,
and after that, then it's like, you know, once someone's run the 4-minute mile, you know, people run the 4-minute mile.
Okay, so Kidney sets the tone. You're saying?
Yeah, I'm probably just kind of patting myself on the back a little bit there.
Oh, sorry, you set the tone rather than Joe.
Yeah.
All right, okay, I didn't even pick that up there. I'm sorry.
Cheers. We'll go back to Shrugby again, will we?
Yeah. That's going to be your go-to, is it?
Yeah, I think so.
But Schmidt goes on, he wins Six Nations 2014, 15, 18.
18, yeah.
Grand Slam, obviously, 18. Mm-hmm. There's such consistency, even between, despite Argentina and New Zealand, 2-1 of losses in World Cups, that he, I would argue, certainly from being there, I'd be pretty biased, but I would argue that he's made a lasting, permanent impression on Irish rugby, and sure, he changed it.
Of course, altogether. He has. People who say he's defined by his World Cup, they're just talking shit, man. They're absolutely talking. He's defined by his winning record with Ireland has been. I don't know if anyone comes near it, and not just that, but like he's improved so many of the players there, and on top of that, he's improved the standard of what's acceptable now in Irish rugby. Like when I first went in coaching with Munster, like the whole thing was like everyone's got a coach like Joe Schmidt, like, which I don't think people can't. You can't imitate somebody because you'd just be a poor imitation of them. Mm-hmm. So we tried doing it. We tried to be so detail oriented, and it didn't work for us. You got to find your own way of doing things.
Yeah.
But people just became aware of that. Of there's a coaching style out there that is, you know, that is just so focused on detail in every single aspect, and making all of the little things count. And you take what works for you as a coach and you apply it in there. And what works for Joe has been, you know, the way he's been working it has been phenomenal. You know, yeah. So he's raised the standard for Irish rugby on a player front, on a coach's front, and expectations. Like, people are like pissed off now. They're going like, "Oh, we lost to the All Blacks." I was like, "Man,
everybody loses the All Blacks."
Yeah, and look, it wasn't ideal. You know, we're disappointed, but like, just take a step back and have a look at this thing in perspective. Like, we're a very small rugby nation, punching massively on the global scale.
Yeah. So let's talk about the future then. Obviously, well, Farrell, I suppose we can talk about Farrell, but even on the pitch, like, Rory's gone. Do you see anybody else not moving forward with this Ireland team, or anybody like the likes of a Joey Carberry?
It's a hard conversation to say who you think will not be involved, because you can't write, like, you know, I don't want to be like, "Oh, cheers, Fly, you just said that I wouldn't be playing anymore." But I think you just look at the age profile of some players. I think there's going to be some interesting, you know, some lads are going to be able to get some opportunities. I think there's going to be opportunities at hooker, obviously, now, with Rory stepped out. The obvious guys would be Niall Scannell, Rob Herring, Sean Cronin. Sean Cronin's been in the mix for so long, you'd have to wonder, like, you know, is he gonna push back in now ahead of Niall Scannell? Is Reece Marshall gonna come in the mix? Who else is knocking around there? You have you know, you've young lads, and you've Kelleher and Byrne in Leinster. You've Tracy in Leinster.
Yeah.
So this is the heir apparent who's gonna step in there. It's probably Niall Scannell at the moment, and his fundamentals are good.
Second row, there's plenty of competition. Back row, there's plenty.
You probably won't like this one, but I think Ian Henderson, man, could, like, he's, we needed more from him at this World Cup. I think he's a phenomenal player, and I think that when he starts firing for Ireland, we're going to be a far better team. You know, he's an awesome player. He can carry, he can tackle.
He fired against Scotland, to be fair. I thought he was probably our best player against Scotland.
I don't know, was he our best player against Scotland? But the reason I felt I was slightly disappointed with him is because I rate him so highly. Mm-hmm. And I rate him so highly because, obviously, I've noticed the esteem that all the Ulster lads hold him in. So then, and when he's played against us at Munster, when I've been coaching, they've generally lost him. Like, I think he's gone off two or three times with an injury against us. And I've went, yes. And I see it's like we get a foothold in the game. So I know how good he can be.
Yeah.
I just feel that, like, we're flogging James Ryan to death here, you know. And I think that Ian Henderson has an ability to be like a front lock, like a guy who can carry the ball, get you over the game line, make massive hits, you know, fuck up mauls. But yet he's athletic enough that he can call lineouts, he can do all those things. So I think that seeing how he evolves, there's huge scope for Ireland to get better with him and James Ryan there in at lock.
Yeah.
I
take it. You would imagine Dev won't get back into the mix.
I think it.
Do you think there'd be, like, obviously then? Well, I don't know. What about
John Cline?
Yeah,
John Cline and Tadhg Byrne. I think it's going to be a case of seeing where how. Well, John Cline is going to be in the mix as a specialist lock. the difference is going to be if James Ryan starts taking over the calling duties in Leinster, then it could be him versus Ian Henderson. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then John Klein could come into the mix as well. Obviously, you can do the permutations whatever you want. Be interesting to see what way Tadhg Byrne goes. Is he going to play a lot at lock for Munster this year? Munster have they've got Billy Holland there, but I think Fineann Witcherly is a guy who, if he performs well, has got, you know, he's a good athlete.
Yeah.
You know, he's very, very coachable.
But Alton Delan, would he get back in the mix at all?
Yeah, possibly. He had a big year there a few years ago for Connacht. He's a good carrier. Probably, you know, there's a few edges to his game he could knock off. He seems to have a good work ethic. I think I'd be interested just seeing between Tadhg and John Klein, seeing how they progress. Will Tadhg start moving into the back row for Munster? I'm not sure.
If he goes into the back row, I think it'll be more difficult for him to get in the mix with Ireland, would it not?
Depends. Like if they play Pete at 7 and CJ at 8 and then Tadhg is at 6 there, like Tadhg...
Dan Levy, if he gets back to where he is, there'll be...
Yeah, Dan Levy.
That's a big question mark,
we massively obviously missed Dan Levy. I tell you, your man Ryan Baird, the young guy in Leinster, looks like a serious player. He's probably a year or two away from this now, but looks like a serious player.
Would he be?
Played the Under-20 World Cup last year.
Okay, so yeah. Scott Penny, same year.
Yeah, Penny. I think we're. Penny is like a man child when I watch him play. How powerful he is as a ball carrier.
Because realistically, this is in 4 years' time. These guys are going to be the Sam Underhill. The Irish equivalent.
You'd ideally have Josh van der Fleer and Dan Levy in the mix there as well, you know, going forward in 4 years' time. I think to try and look at a good way of, rather than just dragging the arse out of this conversation, going through every position in the depth, is to look at what we're missing, and we're missing football. The more footballers we can get on the field, I think Baird has football. No, he's not going to be...
You mean football? You mean like X Factor?
I mean like...
You mean like the equivalent of what you said about Munster, the Dougie Howlett's, the Maffies, there's something to change.
Yes. So like, do you remember when Dennis Leamy played? Leamy was a good athlete, but he was a phenomenal footballer. That was the difference. That's what made him stand out. So getting guys who've got more football, who can play flat in the line, who can pass the ball, people with good catch pass skills.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of creators coming into the back line, you can jump in, give me a hand with this. The guy who's standing out for me is Joey Carberry, is obviously a massive talent.
Yeah.
I think Shane Daly could come into the mix.
Uh-huh.
Shane Daly, you know, he's quite like Stockdale in like similar stature. Both have an X factor. Stockdale is probably more of a physical threat in terms of beating people one-on-one.
Yeah.
Daly is probably, you know, uses a little bit more evasion, a little bit more footwork to beat people, but he's another guy who'd be in the mix. But we need to start padding out a bit of depth at 15 as well. It'll be interesting to see Rob going back to Leinster now and seeing how much he's going to play there with, you know, are they going to put, is Jordan going to stay in the wing? Are they going to look at Jordan at 15? Are they going to look...
Jordan who?
Someone tweeted me and said, get Flannery to say armour and then put an L in front of it. Larmour. There we go. That was pretty easy.
A simple solution.
Instead of Lamour.
He's French. That qualifies for France.
So I watched a bit of Hugo Keenan at 15 for Leinster's last couple of games. Looks like a really elusive player. I see him trying to step in as a first receiver. Jack Conan was on Air Sport with us today. And I asked him about Keane and he just said, yeah. And I said, I see him trying to step in as a first receiver. He goes, he's not really played 10, but he said that Lancaster is very keen on them to come up to play either side of the ruck. Again, to take some of the workload off Johnny Sexton when he's in the field. So Keenan, you know, it's...
What about someone like Mikey Laurie?
I think that guy's an absolute baller. Yeah. Not sure what his best position is. Like, if he's a 10, is there an element of George Ford where teams are just going to constantly be trying to pile down his shot? I suppose, look, you're not going to make a difference. His strength is how elusive he is. His footwork, honestly, we played Ulster, was it last year to start of the year, and we pumped him in Thomond Park, and we were like, just the game was going on. Next minute, this small guy, this hobbit, comes on the field with a scrum cap, And I was like, this Nigel Phoenix going, who the fuck is this guy? He was going, zip, 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 zip. He was like an electron man,
yeah,
just flying around the field. And we were killing Ulster at the time.
He's Colby, but he's, what's his name?
Yeah, Chesan Colby. Yeah, that's what he's like. Great call. Great call. Yeah. You got it. That's
because he actually deals with those tight spaces really well. Mm. He looks really punchy and really dynamic. Mm. Just drives through, kind of penetrates that.
Yeah, quite well. Yeah.
Anyway, I just needed to get a wee bit of Ulster in there.
No, that's good. It's good.
And then obviously, I was going to say Zane Lowe from MTV Select. James James Lowe.
Yeah,
qualifies James in a year's time. He could be that. So that turning point you talked about with Munster, you bring in a little bit of X factor. He could be the X factor that changes Ireland a little bit.
Yeah, I look at Lowe and I think like the strength that he, like when he's in the field, what you got to prepare for is an enormous boot. He's got an enormous boot, and he just wins collisions. Like it's like you've got, you know, you have wingers having different. He said it himself when he was on. Like you've got guys with different skill sets, so he can't do what Jordan Larmour what can do with his footwork, but he'll just show up on the inside of the 10 and just run over a back row, you know. And he definitely would add something different. I think it's the football, man, is what we need to up our football.
Yeah.
And that's not easily done. That's done by Nusafora or someone like that coming in and saying, listen, we're gonna upskill the underage coaches, which they're doing. I know that Munster have brought in a guy to upskill the underage coaches, because it's this thing about like developing players, you gotta have engaged players to develop them, and you gotta have engaged coaches. And at senior level in Ireland, at Munster, Ulster, Leinster senior level, all the coaches are on short term contracts, very, very performance orientated. So if they don't win, it's very easy. So they're all engaged, so the players are engaged.
There's no incentive for them to build anything past when they think they might not be around.
No, well, like they're yeah, that's maybe that's accurate. What I'm trying to get to is that they're all engaged there, but it's at under 10s level when you get a guy who comes in and who's going to do a skill session with a group of 10-year-olds. If he's actually engaged, if whoever is running it, whether it's the CEO in Munster or the CEO in Leinster or Ulster or Connacht, who comes in and goes, your role in developing these kids is so important. So you can just set the cones out and the kids can just run and just do handling drills. Or else you can go out there and actually really give a shit and coach them so that they're taking the ball, catching it early, keeping their hips square, bringing the ball across their body, staying big after the pass. Like, that's the difference.
Yeah.
If you get those guys engaged, then you engage the kids at 10 years of age, then they're developing all the time. And do you remember this, man? After that 2000, this, I think to try and give people who are listening to the show and watching the show a kind of an example of what I'm saying is, when we won the Grand Slam in 2009, remember we spent a weekend camp in Belfast practicing switches. I was 31 years of age and we spent a weekend just practicing switches and we were really poor at it. There's nothing wrong, like that's a fundamental part of the game, being able to run a switch, but we were just so poor at it. And I said, I think we're pretty much the best team in Europe at the moment because we've won the Grand Slam, yet we can't fucking run switches. Uh-huh. Like, and I was 31. So like, you imagine if you have kids at 11, 12 who are just practicing switches all the time, mm-hmm. how good they are then when they get international level. But that's it. The focus is always on, and it's a little bit of the Northern Hemisphere rugby because of the conditions being shitter, because the, you know, for September and the start of October, you know, the weather's generally okay and the ball is dry, so you're running. Then you just go into this shit fight then all the way through October, the latter half of October, November, December, January, February, and then the pitches start to harden up as you're going forward and you start getting a running focus again. But like, so much of it is just set piece orientated and kicking orientated that the skill set almost gets pushed down the list as a priority.
It drops down the priorities, yeah. I think I'm probably to blame for that a little bit. I had my young fella out today. I was coaching mini rugby. And I had them standing in a straight line throwing a ball through a hula hoop. I was going, he's only 4, to be fair.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I just wanted to keep him in. I just wanted to keep him out on the pitch. Yeah. And there was a wee meltdown moment and he kind of looked a wee bit sour. And I thought, even the hula hoop isn't enough to keep him out here.
I set my kid to my kids are doing gymnastics now, man. Oh, yeah. And that's different level, really, really good, because they're doing like up on the bars, they're like working on engaging their lats and then doing little spins and stuff like that and balance beams.
Did they wear wee leotards?
No, no, not my lads. They wear jeans, jeans and Doc Martens and hoodies. It's brilliant.
They sound like rebel gymnastics.
Nah, one of the girls, the last time I went to it, my missus has been bringing them because I've been away on the Saturdays doing the games, but the last time I went to say, could you get your kids to wear tracksuit pants maybe next time instead of wearing jeans? Because they find it hard to do some of the movements. I was like, oh, okay.
But they're cool.
Yeah, yeah, they look cool. Yeah. Doc Martens.
Nice one.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Right, lads, it's time for Black and White. I've set you both the task of picking Ireland's top three players of the World Cup, and I'm going to give you 30 seconds each to name your three players and convince me of who's got the best pick. So, Trimby, do you want to crack on first?
Yeah, okay. My three players are slightly unorthodox picks because two of them didn't start. Gary Ringrose, Dave Kilcoyne and Andrew Conway. I've gone for, that's including the warm-up games, by the way, as well. Mm. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry. Sorry, Conway was incredible in the air. Good support line, scored a couple of tries early on, didn't make the final squad. Could things have been different had Conway started against New Zealand?
Sliding doors again.
Sliding doors, yeah. Mm. Kilcoyne is Ireland's most improved player, but that accolade sells him short massively. It was always the annoying kid got that in school, wasn't it? Yeah. Most improved player, no thanks.
All right.
Anyway, that's Kilcoyne and then Ringrose. Class.
I'm going to go Sexton, Ringrose, Conway. And I think a noticeable mention for Rory Best as well. If you actually go through how much pressure he was under going into the tournament, delivered against Scotland, not great against Japan, but then, you know, he pitched in the other games, he's got a couple of tries, but I'm going to go Sexton because when he's playing well, he was our best player all the time, and I'll probably go Ringrose and then Conway.
So if Sexton had played against the All Blacks, we might have won, huh?
If we had 14 more Johnny Sextons, we would have won. Well, we probably
would. How do you think the scrum would have gone?
Fucked up in the scrum. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I think I'll give that to Fla there. Sexton wasn't amazing today, but all the way up to today, he was great. So.
You would play Sexton at tight head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You just give him extra shoulder pads.
We get his brother man over. I
haven't won black and white in like 5 weeks in a row now. I think it's terminal.
Yeah.
My black and white campaign.
Yeah, well, you can be resurrected next weekend.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much for everyone who listened on all your favourite apps and for those who watched on YouTube. Please do leave us a rating and a review. Make it amusing and you might get read out. Cheers to everyone who was involved in making the show this week. Pat, Alan, Ian and Anthony. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Until next time.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.